are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. The title of this miniseries is I Know This Much Is True, and I'm assuming the thing that he knows is life is hellish, and it just gets worse.
Hell is other people.
Hell is other people. Hell is you. Hell is your twin brother. Hell is your ex-wife. Hell is of your own making. It's just hell. There's not a lot of good here. I mean, you think he'd give the guy a break. At least once you'd think he happened to be out there when the ice cream man drove by or something.
He probably would have got run over.
There's a point in this HBO miniseries where this guy, you're like, how could this guy's life get any worse? And then he just kind of randomly falls off a roof. I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
It's a cool effect, though.
I agree. Given all the bad stuff that did happen to him, I didn't think that was like the pinnacle of bad stuff, which I think kept me watching. I kept waiting for a turn to the real dark side, but I guess we'll get to that.
I mean, the characters, the twin brothers in question, both played by Mark Ruffalo in here, are named Dominic and Thomas Birdsey, and they should have been both called Job, it felt like.
Yeah.
Because they are being tested.
I bet you that was tossed around, though, Wally Lamb when he was writing this.
Yeah, this is based on a 1998 novel, as you mentioned, by Wally Lamb, which was a big hit, partially because of, you know, Oprah's book club, which I don't know if that's where my ex had heard of this book, but she loved it and made me read it. And I was like, oh, that's pretty good. Going back through it, I was like, okay, there are a few slight changes, but it would have made this even darker. Mixed feelings on how that goes. But this TV adaptation, it's, I think, the third time somebody approached this to get it done. And apparently Mark Ruffalo is just a humongous fan of this book, contacting his buddy, Derek Cianfrance, who's a director known for Blue Valentine and The Place Beyond the Pines, to come do this. Now, it's a six-part miniseries. Obviously, at one point, they talked about a movie, and I think everyone involved said, I don't see any way to do this where you're going to get the emotional content to translate in a movie. And I tend to agree. But that being said, this is 6 hours that are incredibly difficult to watch, that wants you to suffer as much as these characters are in watching it, I thought, anyway. But you know what? I always give the story of these things, and I love it when Bradley gives the synopsis, because you're one of my favorite synopsis readers. So let's hear it.
We got the Birdsey brothers, twins, cursed.
Is that it?
You set the bar too high.
Oh, I thought we were doing a tweet. I'm sorry.
So these Birdsey twins, they're living life and they're having a ton of trials. We see them as children and as adults. And one of the Birdsey twins, I believe it was Tommy, Tom and Dom are the twins' names. He starts ranting Bible verse in a library and chops his hand off. Now, before you jump to conclusions, he had a great reason to. To stop the Iraq war and the coming of the devil, I think. It's lunatic rantings, as they say. His brother Dom, his keeper, as it were, wants him to be taken care of and treated like a person and not a burden. And boy, twin Dom carries a lot of burden throughout this entire thing. Some of others making, some of his own. And that's really what this story is about. Two brothers working through their tragic lives and discovering each other and their own situation through journals and memories. And it's a crazy dark rabbit hole of sadness, woe, but maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel. That's up in the air as well.
I would say there's a light at the end of the tunnel. It's considerably more vague than the novel is, which is very specific in the ways that this guy turns his life around and what happens. There's a slight insinuation that maybe things get better, which is not enough after 6 hours of this. It's a great cast. I mean, you can't shit on Ruffalo. He's fantastic in both these very different roles, which there was like 30-pound weight difference. So with filming this, with him being twins and on screen together a lot, they had to repeatedly go back and film something months later and recreate every aspect of it down to the like the, what the weather was like in order to get it right, which sounds like a massive pain in the fucking ass. But there's a great cast of others too. Melissa Leo playing their mom. Juliet Lewis plays Nedra, who is a really fucked up grad student who briefly dates the sane one, Dominic. Catherine Hahn as his ex-wife, who is turns in her, maybe she's had another dramatic performance, I don't know, but this is certainly a really powerful one to remember. Rosie O'Donnell, who I think kind of steals the show here, is a social worker who works closely with Dominic. Imogen Poots as his live-in girlfriend. There's a lot of other people who have smaller roles in here. Bruce Greenwood is sort of the doctor in charge of the case there, who comes and goes from here. Marcello Fonte, who is known for recently being the lead in the film Dog Man, which he won the Cannes Best Actor for that role, but he was in Gangs of New York and The Order and a bunch of other movies, but he plays the grandfather of the two twins, who is a fresh off the boat immigrant to Italy with him and his brother that in the book was twins, and here I'm not sure what they wasn't, but a lot of the story is Dominic reading his tale because his mother had told him, maybe this will help you. And it starts to convince him that his whole family has been cursed.
And it's a convincing argument what his grandfather writes down.
It is. It really is. You're like, yeah, you guys had that coming.
Aw, but yes, also yes.
There had to be some kind of climax, and I think him realizing that he possibly could be cursed and that being the story behind all the bad that has been happening to him, maybe it was his moment to shine, and then it was his moment to crash and give him a sense of humility, which was maybe the light at the end of the tunnel that we were referring to earlier, because it kind of does seem like he comes to some moment of clarity at the end when he finds out the truth about his past, and I'm referring to Dominic here. The series is a little vague. It kind of touches on a bunch of different aspects of, you know, familial issues, relationship issues, and it's a bit all over the place. And I think that that might have been on purpose to make this a more relatable series, aside from the misery porn and, you know, the fact that it could be, you know, some of the most masochistic TV that I think I've been put through this year. I do think that the performances were good and it was very watchable because it was beautiful. I think it was shot in Poughkeepsie, New York, which I didn't necessarily realize that it was the place that it was portrayed in the series. I mean, it just seems like a dark place, but I mean, it really is just, you know, a part of America that can be dark due to the fact that it's just so damn American, I guess. I don't know.
The series is set in Connecticut. Poughkeepsie is a clone of Connecticut.
Good stand-in.
I also think that the performances were really strong, and that was definitely one of the strongest aspects in this. I think Ruffalo, I don't know if this is the performance of his career, but it's definitely up there. The difference between the brothers was so stark. Yeah, and learning that there was 3-month difference between those performances and doing them in the same place and trying to react off of your performance, I thought it was just incredible.
I would have been like, just put me in a fat suit and let's get this done today.
Right, yeah.
I think that says something about Ruffalo and kind of just how much he had invested in this project. I mean, it's pretty clear that he's playing both someone on the verge of insanity and someone who is completely and, you know, consumed by it. And I think that playing those two roles without really seeing them overlap in any kind of way, I thought was absolutely impressive. And I feel like I could watch that series again just so I could watch that happen again, which is crazy to me. The proud brother, kind of angry son kind of arc that is happening with Dominic, I thought that was actually pretty interesting. Back to what we were talking about as far as the religious connotation, did anyone notice that Harris Yulin was the priest at Thomas's funeral? Him as a character, I've just never really seen him as the priestly type. I mean, I think the last time that I saw him was when he was, you know, carrying around that oxygen tank in Ozark with his ass hanging out. He's like a former gangster. Plus, the delivery of the eulogy at the actual funeral just also wasn't very convincing. Like, he just kind of read it like it was, I don't know, it was dark.
It's hard, man. For any given priest, you got to put together a tight 10 for a funeral at least, you know, and make sure you're not like just delivering the same material as the previous funeral. People start to catch on that after a while. Oh, wait, I'm thinking about stand-up comedy. Sorry. Let's see how I got confused.
Let he without sin cast the first stone. Here, I got a bucket of them right here. Chuck them at the coffin.
Let's do it. He's not going to feel anything.
So Tommy walks into a library.
I actually kind of like that scene. I thought it worked thematically with the movie, with the nihilism, with the
overall theme of darkness.
Yeah.
Unrelenting darkness. But we do keep coming back to the acting, which of course is obvious. Once again, I cannot emphasize enough how great Rosie O'Donnell is in this. I mean, she's come a long way from Riding the Bus with My Sister. She's terrific. In fact, I was like, well, that actress looks a lot like Rosie O'Donnell. Thinking that can't possibly be Rosie O'Donnell.
That was my thought.
She was so great. I immediately was on her side. I don't know what it was about her character. I was just like, fuck yeah. She knows what's up.
Cian France picks up. Very Derek Cian France style of directing this film. It's very muted tones. It's very overcast. It's very slow moving and meditative. And at 6 episodes of nonstop tragedy, I kind of feel like maybe we could have made this go a little faster, considering it's already painful enough as it is to sit through this just storyline wise, especially when the actors are really selling it the way they are. We probably could have lost at least an episode of this. It's one of those things I would call a very tough watch. But ultimately, I think it is rewarding, if for no other reason, that these are some of the best performances on television that we're probably going to see this year.
I want to reiterate Catherine Hahn and just how amazing she was as someone who's really only or mostly worked in comedy before this. And this was a swerve in a different direction. And she just absolutely nailed it. You know, I would support any Emmy nomination for her.
She is terrific in here, although I had just gotten finished rewatching Parks and Rec, so I kept seeing her in my head as her character on that, which is not similar.
No, she's got a ton of range, and she brings the humanity that should be there in Dom's life. She never nags at him. She never pressures him to feel a certain way. She's there. She's a joy, and he slowly ruins and crushes that joy, not on purpose, because they're still great friends. And watching her try so hard, not even to save this man, but to let him know that he's here and he matters, is really troubling, but kind of beautiful to watch.
Carrying around a heavy amount of guilt, which reading that book about his grandfather and what a shit heel he was did not help with that whatsoever.
At all. So many dead rabbits. It's like the favorite.
Let's go to final thoughts. Bradley, keep going into yours.
I thought this was super depressing. I'm sure we all did. But I like that. You know, I'm a cathartic type of guy. I surround my own personal life with lots of joy and love. So sometimes I like to dip my toes in these depressing, sad drags. I enjoyed this a lot more than Blue Valentine.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying that as well. Mark Ruffalo being an incredible scene partner with himself is quite the sight to behold. I know that a lot of emphasis is on, he played a crazy person, give him the award. But if they can only nominate one role, I think his portrayal as Dom, the struggling brother trying to love this crazy person, deserves the nod. I also think that 6 episodes, it's tough for me. I think that's fine. Maybe cut back on some grandpa stuff, give or take.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this 8 inspirational Bible passages that lead to 10 occurrences of self-mutilation.
Elliot?
I agree with you, Chris. I think it could have been shorter. A lot of that could have just been cutting rain hitting windows for 3 minutes at a time. The story was really interesting and captivating. Watching the relationship between the brothers play out, even though, you know, the film jumps around in time a lot, so you kind of know a lot about their relationship and where it's headed early on, but that still worked. His relationship with Catherine Hahn's character was a little less revealed, and that was sort of more played out in a traditional narrative style where, you know, you don't necessarily know where things are going. I kind of like misery porn, to be honest, but I felt that at times this was like dropping every bad thing that could happen. Like, I half expected Dom to be struck by a lightning bolt.
A piano just falls out of the sky and hits him.
Piano delivery airplane.
Roadrunner runs past.
Turns out his ex-wife has joined ISIS, you know.
Right. I'm going to reveal something. This is actually our second time recording this podcast. And since then, I think I've actually grown to like this a little bit more. So I am going to give it 8 out of 10 smashed typewriters.
Santiago?
I actually really did also like it. I think it was appropriate in length. I liked how spastic it was. I think that's more real. You know, kind of life is spastic in that regard. You know, tragedies don't kind of just happen in a linear sense. They kind of can come from everywhere. And I think that gave some subject matter that I felt was relevant and maybe just appropriate for these dark times. And so the catharsis was all there. Maybe that's what made me want to, again, get through it and see Dominic's arc, which I think was again, one of the coolest parts. And I will also make a nod to Catherine Hahn. I mean, I feel like she kept silent through a whole lot of it, but it was also a good example of just how graceful some people can be. I feel like her character was relatable as far as looking at this horrible situation from the outside. And even though she was, of course, involved at the beginning, I do think that she took kind of like a side step view towards the end. All in all, the series was beautiful. It had great performances by all kinds of different people, but especially Mark Ruffalo and Rosie O'Donnell. I also think that I like it more now that I've had some time to kind of ingest it, and I may just give it another watch because there are some people I'd like to show it to. But to wrap it all up, I'll give it 8 out of 10 severed bloody hands.
I also grew to like this more over time, and I think part of it was when we recorded it, as we said, we recorded it for the first time, we were joined then by another friend of ours, a friend of the site, Alex Hacker, who worked on here as the assistant to the director, so he was present during pretty much all of this and had direct conversations with all the leads, with the director, was present for all conversations with the director about things, so we had some really interesting insights, a lot of which he shared with us off recording, but of course all that doesn't exist now because we had technical issues, but he really gave me a bigger picture of what was going on, and it helped me appreciate it just a little bit more, which I guess is probably always the case when you actually talk to somebody. You know, like if I talked to someone who worked on movie 43, I'd probably go from I hope whoever made this burns in hell to I hope they just get life in prison. But wow. I like the original book this is based on. I think the performances are tremendous. I do still insist, I think this is one of those things that they made weird decisions of what to cut and what to keep. There's a whole subplot involved Imogen Poot's character that really plays into, importantly, in the book, the end of the book. Here, you could have cut her character out entirely and it would have made little to no difference. You could have cut out Juliette Lewis's character entirely. It would have made little to no difference. It's just excess stuff that feels like it doesn't really need to be there. There's more than enough colorful characters, as it were, to keep the story going without those subplots that don't really go anywhere important inside of you or add anything to it. So I'm kind of confused why they chose to keep those things and excise others. But we can only judge what they actually gave us. And as it is, this is flawed, but quite pretty, and some of the best acting you're going to see in anything, I suspect, this year, even comparing this to cinematic output. Or can we even say that? Nothing's actually playing in cinemas. What would have been cinematic output?
This is the best thing since Sonic.
I'm not going with you on that one because I didn't care for Sonic.
Me neither.
There, I said it. You can listen to my Digital Noise review of Sonic the Hedgehog if you want to hear me bitch about that movie. But I'm going to give this 7.5 out of 10 times. I was like, boy, Rob Hubel's just really trying to figure out what he's doing here. I love Hubel. He's a great comedian, but he really did look, unlike Catherine Hahn, who's, like I said, lifetime comedian, really got what this part was and delivers this tremendous performance. Hubel's not doing a bad job, but he feels like he has no idea what he's supposed to be doing. Like, why did you cast me for this, is the feeling I got the whole time watching
it. He does kind of have like an FX dark comedy vibe about him, even when he's in this show. Like, he's just not in the right place.
He's like when Bob Odenkirk first started doing dramas every once in a while, and you could see that look in his eyes, like, somebody fucked up and gave me this role.
I immediately thought of Better Call Saul. Like, this is like a bad car salesman on Better Call Saul. I don't know what he's doing here.